While New York civil courts are supposed to be a mechanism for pursuing justice, they've also been a tool for individuals and corporations to silence whistleblowers, intimidate journalists, and generally stifle the First Amendment, according to critics of the current legal system. But protections against people who would use potentially frivolous lawsuits to stymie their opponents may soon be enacted into law if Governor Andrew Cuomo signs off on recent legislation that made its way through the Capitol this past week. To discuss the issue, we're joined by Justin Harrison, policy counsel at the New York Civil Liberties Union, which advocated for these stronger protections. Welcome to the show, Justin.
Thanks for having me.
So can you give us an example of how a lawsuit might inhibit someone from speaking out or writing something?
Sure. We issued a legislative memorandum in support of this bill, and I'll give you the example that we put in the memo. Suppose a journalist publishes a truthful, accurate report suggesting that a particular elected official is unfit for office. The report damages the official's public image, but instead of responding to the report on merits, the official, who is wealthy and powerful and well-known, sues the journalist for defamation or invasion of privacy or something like that. Now, here's the problem. The official knows that the journalist's information is true, and he knows that his own lawsuit is completely baseless. But that doesn't matter, because he also knows that the journalist doesn't have the money or the time, the resources, to defend the suit and call the official's bluff. Now, unfortunately, the journalist knows this too. And so, faced with basically financial ruin, the expense of having to defend even a frivolous lawsuit simply for telling the truth, the journalist retracts the report, issues an apology, makes additional statements discrediting her own reporting, and the official then agrees to withdraw the lawsuit that he knew all along was frivolous and that he would have lost had he gone forward. The journalist is silenced, and the public is denied the valuable information, and the official gets to, continue believing that the truth is whatever he can afford. That's basically how it works. And it works not just in the context of political officials. You also see it in, comments on websites or editorials or anything published on the internet, that sort of speaks truth to power and where the person being spoken about wants to abuse the legal system to shut up their critics.
Has that hypothetical that you laid out actually happened? And are there lots of examples of these cases being filed?
It happens all the time. And in fact, one of the better known examples going on right now are some of these lawsuits that the Trump administration has against news outlets like the New York Times, the Washington Post, CNN. Let's not address the reports on the merits. Let's just sue, and we'll see if we can make it very expensive to defend. And, and if it gets too expensive, then maybe we can get news outlets to drop their reporting.
After a quick break, we'll be back with more on legislation designed to stop lawsuits aimed at stifling free speech.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.
We're continuing our conversation about efforts to protect free speech against frivolous lawsuits, and our guest is Justin Harrison, policy counsel for the New York Civil Liberties Union. And so we have laws on the books to protect us against these types of lawsuits already. So what is it about these existing protections that falls short?
Well, the existing law applied only to the public permitting process. Let's use the real estate context as an example. Suppose a real estate developer applied for a zoning permit and or a zoning variance, and the local residents found the variance application problematic to their neighborhood. They would show up at the zoning board hearing and criticize the real estate developer. And the real estate developer would then sue them all for defamation. That was the public permitting process to which New York's existing anti-SLAPP law applied. Only applied to public permitting. public permitting or public licensing. Didn't apply to basically all other forms of speech, as well as television, radio, political satire, any sort of truthful reporting or truthful speech on issues of public concern in any media. So this law will broaden those protections to cover basically anything that is said in public on an issue of public concern. And it defines issue of public concern very broadly, basically as anything of interest to the public other than a purely private matter. A place open to the public or a public forum is also language taken directly from the state of California's anti-SLAPP law, which has one of the best anti-SLAPP laws in the country. And the California courts have interpreted that very, very broadly. Basically, it's, any communication shared between, shared between multiple parties, anything that could form the basis for a defamation suit, in other words.
So then, Justin, what is it about our current system, though? You describe these lawsuits as frivolous and can cost a defendant, a lot of money. What allows them to get to that point? Why doesn't a judge, as soon as something's filed, say, no, this doesn't pass the sniff test, you don't have to go anywhere with this? How come our current system doesn't cover that already?
Well, it takes a long time to even get to that sniff test.
Okay.
Plaintiffs and defendants are entitled to discovery. They're entitled to make motions, to produce witnesses. They're entitled to send subpoenas. They're entitled to do all the things that, form a regular lawsuit. And that takes time. And I'm sure you've heard the expression, we're going to paper the other guy to death.
Mm-hmm.
That's what happens in a SLAPP suit. The goal of the plaintiff who files the frivolous SLAPP suit is not to win the lawsuit in the end. It's just to make it cost too much and take too long to defend. So right away, as soon as the lawsuit is filed, they start papering the defendant with discovery requests and subpoenas and motions, and they basically drown the defendant in legal expenses before it even gets to a judge. Usually the way a case like that, if the defendant can afford to put up a fight in a state without an anti-SLAPP law, that case will go on for a year or 2 years with the defendant paying their lawyers a fortune just to get to the end of discovery and pretrial proceedings and to make that motion to dismiss and to raise their constitutional arguments or to raise their arguments about how this is a frivolous defamation case. And then sure, the judge might look at it and say, well, yeah, this suit was nonsense all along and never should have been filed and it's dismissed. But, it's only the luckiest defendants who have the money and the time and the lawyer power to get to that point. Most of the time, if it's some blogger who's just sitting at home in front of a computer who posts something on the internet that some public official doesn't like, they can't afford that.
You use that acronym SLAPP. What does that stand for?
It stands for Strategic Lawsuit Against Public Participation. It was coined in the 1980s by, I think, two law professors who sort of researched and discovered the phenomenon.
Well, and you talked about the cost, and the bill memorandum argues that courts rarely award attorney's fees, let alone punitive damages, to defendants who beat back one of these lawsuits, even though the judges are empowered to reward some sort of damages. Do we think that outcome will be potentially different if this legislation does become law?
Well, yes, it will be different because the new law requires those attorney's fees to be paid. The current law just says that the court may award fees and costs to a defendant who survives a SLAPP suit. The new law follows the better SLAPP laws, the better anti-SLAPP laws throughout the country, and makes those fee awards mandatory. The courts will have to impose reasonable attorney's fees and costs to a defendant who succeeds in having a SLAPP suit dismissed.
On the face of it, it seems like everything you're saying seems pretty reasonable. We want to stop frivolous lawsuits. Is there someone who's like against this bill? Why have we not done this until now?
There is a concern about meritorious defamation lawsuits, getting caught up in the proceedings and improperly dismissed. And that's a valid concern. You know, obviously, if you have a plaintiff who's genuinely aggrieved and who has been wronged in some form of public speech, you know, we have defamation laws for a reason, and they should be enforced. Obviously, they should be carefully enforced in light of First Amendment concerns, but, you know, they exist and they should be enforced. So what the anti-SLAPP law does is provide for an early motion hearing. It provides for preference in a motion to dismiss the SLAPP suit, and it gives the court an early look at the suit. And the plaintiff has to present some evidence that their claims will succeed. Not the same standard of proof that they would have to provide at trial. It's not that rigorous, but they have to provide some evidence to show the court that their claims at least have enough merit to go forward. And that's enough to stop, you know, all but the most complicated SLAPP suits. And so, you know, giving the court an early look at the plaintiff's evidence is usually enough to get the court to say, hang on, this lawsuit is nonsense. I'm going to toss it. And then the other thing the bill does is stay, that is put on pause, all of the proceedings that are going on while the court considers the motion to dismiss. So, you know, courts are busy, their dockets are full. It takes the court some time to decide the motion, even after it's been argued and briefed. During that time, because the lawsuit is stayed, the plaintiff can't run up costs anyway. You know, defendant files a motion to dismiss. The motion is pending for a few months. A plaintiff who wants to run up costs will immediately start scheduling depositions and sending out subpoenas and, you know, shooting documents over to the defendant and demanding they review and respond and all of those things. So it's, yeah, I mean, the meritorious defamation claims will get identified by the court, and they'll be allowed to proceed. So those are, you know, those are the principal criticism.
If enacted, are there still additional protections that the state should consider in this area, or is it mission accomplished, on to the next legal injustice?
No, there are some things that the state could do, you know, and that I've spoken about and that some members might be willing to consider. You know, protection for anonymous commenters and anonymous critics on the internet, protection against unmasking subpoenas. And then also, you know, additional protection in federal court. Not to get too deep down the procedural hole, but there are questions about how state anti-SLAPP laws apply in federal court. And so providing additional layers of protection there, you know, might be worth considering, too, if the federal courts of New York decide that there's a problem applying New York state anti-SLAPP law. So there's always more to do.
Well, we've been speaking with Justin Harrison, policy counsel at the New York Civil Liberties Union. Justin, thank you so much for making the time.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Join us again for Capital Press Room, a production of WCNY Connected, Syracuse.